Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. Why are they the ultimate? Well, one of the reasons is because they're going to help you with ICD-10, the transition to the new codes. You need to know it, and you probably don't know it as well as you should. Check them out at www.webpt.com/podcast to find out more about ICD-10 for a free demo and a lot more. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. Dr. Gene Chirac-Abrad here with Dr. Ersin Relihi. Oh, so, Urs, how you doing?
I'm back.
You are well. How back. About you? I'm doing pretty good. It's been a crazy couple days. And again, on the last podcast, I committed a cardinal rule of podcasting when I was talking with Larry Benz and dated the podcast. And I'm going to do that again. So this is the podcast after the holidays, after Thanksgiving. And it was a fun holiday. Did you have a good holiday?
I had a great holiday. Only one child was sick. And then after we got home, then the vomiting started. But at least that didn't happen at my parents' house.
That's pretty good. I mean, when you're playing with a softball team of girls, one goes down, you just got to put in the pinch hitter, you know. But the pinch hitter is a few months away, I think, right?
Yes. Well, I do. I think it's been since the last time I was on that we got a second ultrasound by the owner of the actual practice. Did I say this or on this podcast or no? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
The owner, who's done pretty much a bajillion ultrasounds, said that she was so sure that this was a boy. Not only did she say she was 1,000,000% sure, she said, if I have another girl, she's going to pay for her wedding and her college.
Did you get that in writing?
I should have got it in writing.
Oh, got to get written down.
It looked fairly obvious. I mean, ultrasounds don't really, you know, they're not exactly HD, but it looked fairly obvious to anyone with eyes.
Well, congratulations on your boy. We had an ultrasound as well, and we're having a girl. Right. So to counteract yours, we already have a boy, and now we have a girl on the way. So, I went out, bought stock in Ruger, and I'm ready to go. I'm going gun shopping, Urs.
Nice. Yeah. I actually just got I ordered a salt gun.
Well, you have enough girls that justifies that.
Yeah. Oh, not an assault. S-salt. It's just called S-A-L-T. It's marketed as the first safe home protection gun.
Sure. I believe you.
No, when they start dating, then it's going to be a shotgun. But
yeah, that's going to be a whole different podcast when they start dating.
Oh gosh.
So, Ersin, how was prison today?
Yeah,
Ersin, the clinical prison podcast
from Sing Sing.
So the holidays for us also bring about a slightly different perspective, because you and I have an actual physical product that we sell, and this time of year is big in terms of Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and just a lot of sales going on. And for me, obviously it's selling it, but it's also crafting a cool marketing campaign. I read so much on marketing and psychology of marketing, and Black Friday, this time of year, just the holidays in general, really is a cool time to test out a lot of business concepts and just principles that I really wanted to try out. So I got to try out a bunch, and most have been successful. Did you get to do anything new in terms of selling?
Yeah, I worded my emails differently. I noticed after listening to Daniel Pink and reading some of his stuff. Neil Patel, especially about the psychology of marketing. I started looking at different emails and the ones that I was more likely to actually read the whole way through. So I tried crafting and writing some of my MailChimp emails similarly to something as simple as even starting the email with, "Hey Gene, I know it's the holidays, but I got a big sale going on," and et cetera, et cetera. And I noticed my colleague Mike Reinold from ISTMtechnique.com, he was, on Monday, he wrote something like, "What you may have been traveling, so you might have missed this, but so in case you were, I've had a sale going on." So,
That's good
things like
stuff.
that, and I think it's more personal, and you tend to read the email, and it definitely improved my click open rates.
That's awesome. A technique I tried out that I've been wanting to do is it's kind of like perspective. So you could say, the usual stuff. There's a sale going on, buy my product type of thing. Or you can try, it's December, almost the holidays. There's a sale going on. And that turned out to be incredibly effective because that puts people in a very, very direct position and gives them relevance, right? They're like, oh crap, it is December and I need gifts. And it becomes a very personal message. So I've been very interested in emotional selling, the not manipulating people's emotions, but connecting emotionally, which I guess could be perceived as manipulating. But it's worked out pretty well, and a lot of that came from Daniel Pink and talking with him on the podcast and at PPS and his book, and picked up a lot of cool techniques from that. And that was definitely one of them, and it works out pretty well.
Yeah, well, I think with that in mind, let's talk to introduce our guest. Our guest tonight is Dr. Mike Reinold, and I'm sure you guys know him, MikeReinold.com. 5 years ago, when I started blogging, someone said, "Hey, that tool that was a copy of yours, it was featured on MikeReinold.com." And I was like, "What's Mike Reinold? Who's Mike Reinold?" And, "Oh, he's one of the big PT bloggers." I'm like, "There are PTs in social media?"
I didn't know where you were going with that for a second, Ernest. You're like, that tool? And then there was a slight pause. I was like, what? That's not nice.
No.
You're still
Well,
bitter about that article, I hear.
no. Now it's just like I made the most lemonade I possibly could have done. Hey, you know what? If that wouldn't have happened, I never would have started blogging, and I'd just be teaching in Buffalo, and
I'm going to
that's it.
indirectly take credit for that, then. I like that.
Yes, Mike,
Take
thank you for
it.
reviewing a knockoff of my tool.
You guys are, all you listeners are welcome.
Yeah, right. You launched my career.
And now you know the story of how the edge came to be. So, Mike,
Right.
welcome to the
That was
show,
pretty good.
man. Awesome to have you. We've been big fans, like Kirsten said, even before the dawn of PT social media. And I have a very important question for you to start all of this off. Are you ready?
I wait. Okay, now I'm ready.
The anticipation is building. What the hell is going on in Boston that they're paying over $200 million to a pitcher?
It's well, I hate to say it. It's classic Red Sox. It's a knee-jerk 180 reaction to whatever didn't work last year. So it's we've actually come full 360 now though from 3 years ago. So it's confusing. It's quite confusing. You keep taking 180 knee jerks. Eventually, you get back to where you started. So
Or
I don't know what that means.
you run out of knees and have to figure out something else.
It's interesting. I short term, I think, with the risk management of baseball, I think short term it's going to be fantastic. I think an inside baseball thing that most people that are outsiders don't get and fans don't get is that ownership doesn't really care how much they pay them. They make bazillions of dollars off it. Like they really don't care. It's not that big of a deal. It's like when the Yankees back in the day were making all those crazy signs. With all this, like everybody on their team was making $20 million. They really don't care. They make so much money. They just want to win. So it's funny. People like back in the day kind of admire what the Red Sox people are always like saying, how JD Drew, was just the example. Wasn't worth it. And it's like, how do you define it wasn't worth it? So it's the ownership doesn't really care how much they pay. They'll pay anything for these people. They're just I don't know. It's an interesting perspective. So I don't know. Thanks. I don't want to get too far off on a tangent. I feel like we're gonna go on many tonight, but
We are going to
yeah,
go on many.
$31 million for one season is pretty crazy. But if you win a World Series next year, you'll say it's worth it.
Well, that's the big if. And of course, we're talking about David Price, and we already dated this podcast, so we might as well keep going with it. The Red Sox signed David Price today. And the main reason I brought up David Price in the baseball, not the $200 million contract, not that he's in the AL East and I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan. None of that. None of that, Mike.
Geez, sorry.
None of that. Not because of that.
That's a tough team to be.
Yeah,
that's a tough one.
Well, I mean, we only won the division a couple years ago, but that's okay. We're not talking about that. That's not what this is about. The point is that you are in a baseball town and you are known for a lot of baseball centered care and treatments and shoulder stuff, and you pump out a lot of stuff on baseball that I know I've watched your videos and read your articles and blogs, and I think it's awesome stuff that you put out. So I've always been curious, what made you want to get into this, not into the field of physical therapy, but specifically the baseball realm? Is it a love of the game? Is it a love of watching Red Sox knee-jerk reactions? I mean, what got it going?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, growing up in Boston, obviously, it's, you know, one, it's a sports town, I guess. But I guess in my generation, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, I guess it was probably more Red Sox than it was any of the other sports. So, you know, I was a big baseball fan. I played baseball growing up. So I kind of, you know, I wanted to, I guess I was fortunate enough that I had the foresight. I don't know why I did, but in high school, I essentially tried to combine my passions. And I think I took like anatomy class, like junior year of high school or something like that. And I was like, oh, you know, the health field seems cool. You know, and I really like tried to explore like what to go into. Should I be athletic training? Should I be physical therapy? You know, what do you do? That type of thing. And I tried to, you know, I guess somehow combine two passions of, you know, I think I like the health field and you know, how do I do it with sports? You know, so I kind of, I guess that's kind of how I started my career. I think a lot of people, you know, do it that way when they go into it. But for me, I was always just kind of real, you know, pro baseball. So, heck, I remember, you know, I probably shouldn't admit this, but I think like my college semesters, like when we had like neurology and PD class, I didn't buy any of the books. I actually bought a bunch of sports medicine books. Like I bought like, you know, Dr. Andrews had like a classic book back then called Injuries in Baseball. It's probably like from like 1995 or something like that. I bought that book with my money. I was supposed to buy my neurology books. And then I just had to go to the library and study for neuro class, like every time we had a test. You know, so I don't know, in a roundabout way, it's kind of, I don't recommend you do that, you current students, but I guess what I'm getting at here, and I think part of why you kind of, you know, went down this road here, is that I think one of the most important things you can try to do going into this profession is try to do something really passionate about, you know, that, you know we're all, you know, probably similar age, we've been doing this close to 20 years now, and I can't imagine if we weren't passionate about it, what we would be doing right now. I know we surely wouldn't be talking about it at 9 o'clock at night on a podcast. So you gotta do what you're passionate about. So I was, you know, obviously I was a big baseball fan, so you know I kind of went that route.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in terms of passion too, on social media, I mean, you have been blogging for longer than me, right? I've only been blogging for 5 years, and I remember even after writing. Even after only doing it for maybe 8 to 12 months, I had one guy reach out to me. He's like, "Hey, longtime reader." I'm like, "Oh, how long could it have been? I mean, I haven't been blogging that long."
That's but, a lifetime, man. That's a lifetime.
Right. I know. I guess this happens when you blog every day like me, right? Like, yes, I know. It's crazy. It's a crazy schedule. But you know, people always ask me, how do you do it? How do you even stay around? Because, yeah, when you're one of the first people I connected with 5 years ago. But you think about all the blogs that have come and go since then. I mean, it's dozens, right? Like people blog, and you know, they say the average person on social media who starts up something, they last maybe a year, right? So, I mean, that's why I definitely wanted to have you on too, because you're just one of the big lasting voices and you continue to make waves. And, you know, how do you do it? What drives you to be so prolific in social media?
All your secrets, please.
Well, when I started, you know, to be honest with you, I don't even remember what year I started, like 2008 or something like that, when I probably got a little bit more consistent with it there. I've pretty much done 2 blog posts a week, you know, every week since 2008. I mean, maybe around the holidays, I missed it for a couple of events in my life, but, you know, you just get on a consistent, like, production schedule. But,
you know, I don't know if people really realize it, but you know, I spent like the first kind of chapter of my career was, you know, kind of the, you know, more of the, you know, being a clinician slash researcher role. So I did a lot of clinical research, and you know, we considered our clinic like a laboratory almost to an extent, and we were always doing research studies in our lab and you know, stuff like that. So it was very like clinical research based. But then we'd educate everybody with that because, you know, I think having that perspective of being the clinician that also does research, I think was pretty refreshing, right? Than just the straight PhD that is just doing research but has no clinical implications. So, you know, that's kind of how I kind of started off, and that was kind of the vibe of what we did down in Birmingham. And obviously, like my mentor Kevin Wilk is, you know, still doing that stuff to this day. So, you know, Kevin and I would literally travel around the country and probably teach a seminar, you know, 2 weekends a month. You know, like literally, like it was crazy. I think we'd be gone like 30 weekends a year. It was something ridiculous, but you know, obviously I was younger and it was, you know, doable. And then all of a sudden I got, you know, the job and the opportunity with the Red Sox. So I started to do that. And I felt like I didn't have an outlet to continue to educate because I couldn't travel anymore. I was, you know, on the road with the Sox all the time. So I used the internet to, you know, as my outlet to educate and to continue to do that. And it was, you know, interesting. You know, I think about it, I'm on a plane flying cross country overnight, or I'm in a hotel room away from my family for a week. It was a perfect opportunity for me to just sit there and grind it out. So that's kind of, you know, why and how I kind of did it. I just like to educate. And then I'll be honest with you now, I like just sharing what's, you know, what's on your head. And I'm sure that's kind of how you feel, Erson, too. It's, you know, here's what I'm thinking right now, and you share it, and you're sharing it for two reasons. One is like you just want to share what you're doing for the sake of our profession, I guess. But two is you kind of want to see what you get for a vibe back, and I think that's kind of how you grow as you know, someone in our position is, you know, hey, here's what I'm doing now, and then you kind of get feedback and dialogue and interaction with people, and you know, you continue to tweak even what you're doing. So for me, it's an outlet. You know, so I guess that's why I've done it, and you know, it's grown, and I don't know, it's at this point, I don't know. I mean, I think there was one April Fool's Day. I don't remember what year, but I just announced like, hey, last day of the vlog, guys, I'm closing it up. And like it was hilarious, the
I remember
responses that I
that.
got.
That
That
was
was
great.
awesome. I'm gonna do that again, but
Well, it might be counterproductive
I
now
shouldn't
since you
indulge
just
you.
told everyone, yeah.
But I did that one day and it was funny. Yeah, but that's fine. They'll forget. Right. But anyway, so in a long around about way, I mean, I do it because it's one, it's an outlet to educate with people, but I also do it because it helps me grow. You know, I stay on top of the research. I stay on top of what's trendy on the internet. And I kind of feel like, you know, like you guys said a couple of times and just kind of alluded to it, how I'm, you know, active on social media and stuff. Like I actually feel like I'm pretty neutral online. Like, trust me, I'm actually more strongly opinionated in person, but I'm wise enough to know that I really, really firmly believe none of us are right. This is what we're currently doing now and what we currently believe is right. But I'm not gonna be the knucklehead that goes online and like battles with people. People forever, you know, being definitive because I actually think we're all wrong, and we'll continue to, you know, adapt and change our thought processes over the years as we learn more. So, you know, I feel like I'm kind of neutral. I try to just I take like what's out there and learn, and you know, I guess the, you know, the biggest thing I'd say in terms of like me clinical practice and how I do this is that, you know, we're happily like mutts in our field, right? Like my friend Ken Crenshaw with the Arizona Diamondbacks is, you know, kind of uses that a lot, but he says he's a mutt. You know, he's not a one system guy. He takes a bunch of different thoughts from people and puts it together, and then that's how you create your thoughts and your vision.
Almost like an
So
eclectic approach.
it's quite
Ooh,
eclectic. I like
yeah,
that.
well
I
done.
should trademark that.
Well done.
I know. I think it's actually, when I
Yeah.
went to go look at a trademark, I think it's actually a band.
It's what?
I think it's a band. I think there's a band called the Eclectic Approach.
Yeah, that's a little too generic, but you can do like eclectic therapy or something
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
pretty
I'll
good. Yeah.
be honest, you'll sound like a weirdo. No offense, but
Well, it's a hard brand to have. People don't know what eclectic means because most people are kind of dumb. And even one of my smartest blog followers who actually has an amazing following himself, and he has like he's a chiro, teaches mobility courses, the Movement Fix, Dr. Ryan DeBell. He even told me he had to look up Eclectic before he started emailing me. I was like, that's why I'm transitioning to modern manual therapy, the Eclectic approach.
There you go. I like
know that's good what stuff. That is. They at least I know think, what they're for.
I think that's a wise branding decision.
Yeah. Yes.
It just agreed. Went in with the whole E thing. You know, with the E, the Edge, Dr. E, all that. Me being too cheap to pay for one Lego, so I kept on reusing the same E for all my different brands.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done. Reusable. That's good. With social media, Mike, I think it's a right way to do it and the wrong way to do it, obviously. But, you know, everyone has an agenda. We all have an agenda, and that's okay. It's as long as you're transparent about that agenda. You know, a lot of times we put thoughts out because we're comfortable doing it. You know, we're somewhat established in different fields or in different niches that we have. And with that, you know, with that comfort breeds ability to disseminate information and not worry about competition. Talked a little bit about competition on the last podcast from, read a book by Peter Thiel, Zero to One, about startups. And he talks a lot about how when you're so focused on competition, you lose track of your ideas and creativity and growing. You just get so focused on competitors. And I think it's kind of the same realm, that whenever you try and always trying to sell on social media instead of engaging and connecting and opening yourself up to, this is what I'm thinking, this is why I'm thinking, this is why I'm doing it, what do you guys think, versus like you said, this is what I'm doing and it's right, this is why it's right and everybody should do it. That's a whole different approach to take, and usually a few good things happen from that.
Right. And I would actually even comment on kind of what you said there too. Like, I would say the part about the online and the social media aspect that I actually dislike the most is the actual sales process and all the sales parts of it. And I mean, yeah, I'm an offender. I get it. It's like, it's just part of the business of online stuff, but it's something I truly hate, right? There's no passion about selling, you know, like we're passionate about being clinicians that educate. So we're very passionate about creating an educational product for it. And trust me, it's painful for me to send out dozens of emails when, you know, we're having a promotion or a sale for a new product. I hate it. I think it's, you know, I think it's the most annoying part of what we all do, including myself. But, you know, it works. And I don't say that in like in a good way. It works for business. But like every time you send out an email, you get people ordering your product. So if you don't send out an email, then people aren't going to order your product and they're not going to learn from you. And that's the whole point of what we're doing. So, you know, I hate sending out multiple emails about like a sale or a promo we're having. I hate that aspect of it. But I don't know. I understand you kind of brought up the psychology of selling and stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes it takes 3 emails for people to freaking click the link. I don't know why. You know, yeah. So, you know, it's the interesting part of our business. Like, I think we're all educators. You said it quite well. We disseminate the information, our ideas, and we want to help people. We want to help people grow. And, you know, I think of all the products I make, the reason why I make my products, one is, here's what I'm currently thinking. But two is, like, what would have wanted to know if I was a younger clinician at that time? Because you should see my interactions with students now too, and I'm sure if there's a lot of students on here, but there are so many people that are getting so carried away right now with stuff. I am like getting more basic and more, I don't know what to call it, more streamlined, I guess. But there are kids coming out of school that are preaching all these things, like, you know, concepts from like PRI and DNS and like even the pain science groups and stuff like that. All that stuff's fantastic. All this stuff's great. But if you're just graduated college 6 months ago and you're preaching that stuff like that's the only thing out there and that's the best thing and it's all definitive and you have no idea how to treat somebody that's in pain or, you know, has an actual problem, then you've totally missed the boat. Like, we're just getting so carried away that, you know, I just want to simplify things. I guess that's my approach. We need a modern manual therapist that's eclectic. Does that exist?
If only such a thing existed.
If only.
It's just something.
I don't know.
Like,
check
that.
Check your email tonight. There might be a...
We should brand that.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. If you're interested in eclectic approach to modern manual therapy, click on this.
I like it. Hey, it's December, everyone.
Right. I know. Actually, when I get an email from Mike Reinhold that says, hey, Urson, I don't actually open it because it's not actually from Mike. It's from whatever service he's currently using.
The automation process.
If it's just like, hey, if the subject is like, why don't we teach a course next year, then I open it. You know, it's like,
right. The only emails for me are grammatically incorrect. And
yeah.
And yeah, that's
have a super catchy subject line.
Nice. Hey,
I take offense by that. I wrote that email. I mean, perhaps a software application sent it to you. But
to me, yeah.
I wrote it.
I also write all my own emails. Even
Mike put out sweat and tears into those emails, Urson.
He was all stressed out as he hit send. Yeah, every time I see MailChimp and, you know, like
the button, yeah.
I use MailChimp, I hit send, and then like you get that thumbs up or then like the monkey hand goes up. I'm like, ooh, did I just offend like thousands of people? Or...
I've long stopped feeling things like that. But Mike, to your point, I think it's a great point, but I feel no such thing because we've spent a lot of time in building up, I don't want to say trust, but the relationship with the people that they subscribe to the emails and they are following and they're listening. And honestly, if there's something that we're selling, we put everything into it and our time and commitment to create something quality that we feel like represents us in the best way possible and putting it up out there. You know, people can unsubscribe to the emails if they don't like it, but you know, it's not something that we beat them over the head with, nor should we. And but in terms of social media, like some people just have accounts and all they do is sell, you know, like those accounts where it's buy this, buy that, we're here, we're there, never engaging, never putting out information, never getting conversation started. It's those that don't get it. You know,
it's
just sell. And people just, they become immune to it. They just become deaf to that message. And that's definitely not the right way to do it.
Right. We have agendas, and I always tell people it's easier for me to blog because I have seminars and products that I'm selling. But in the end, I think I put out a ton of free information, and about 2 years into it, I think one of the people was Mike, and another people, a couple of the people big on social media said, you need to actually promote your products more. Like, you don't mention them enough. I don't do enough links. And so for me, it was finding the balance between selling and providing free content and useful information that you can use, you know, immediately in the clinic. And I still think that there's a balance to that. And like we always say on the podcast, you know, selling and sales and business, it's like a dirty word. Like PTs don't think they're in the business of sales, but everyone is in the business of sales because you have to sell your practice. You have to sell your business.
Right. I think that's that book that you kind of mentioned, Daniel Pink, but his book, you know, To Sell as Human or whatever it is I think that's a mandatory read for all young clinicians, because just even when you're trying to get somebody to do an exercise, you're selling them on the exercise. You know, it's an interesting thing. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Sales is part of it. And you know, I think as long as you're, you know, I think, you know, people like us, I know obviously we're friends, so we think the same, but, you know, we're educators first, and we care about the people and helping everybody grow first. And as long as that's your primary objective, then, you know, I think you guys are doing great that way. It's just, you know, just educate first. And then, yeah, I mean, if you want to dig a little deeper on this topic, okay, yeah, sure. I'll spend more time making a product for you, but let's trade.
In the meantime, look for a new course by Mike Reinhold and myself coming in 2016.
Now, you only said that just to put pressure on me to make sure it happens now.
Well, yeah, we've been talking about this forever.
The psychology strong.
Keep on having babies, and you went cash-based, and I went cash-based.
I legit have like 10 like new products I want to build, and I just there's not enough time in the day, so you know, we'll get there, but maybe that's a good use of this, you know, the listeners here, you know, tell us
outsource.
Yeah, well, tell us what you want us to teach you.
Yes, right.
You know,
there you go.
You tell us.
I like it.
We got a lot we want to do. We just, you know, what do you guys want to talk about? But yeah, no, I mean, we'll give you a sneak peek. Urson and I have been exchanging cryptic emails at about 1 every 7 days about trying to put our next kind of product together in a little collaboration of some sort. I think it's going to be good. So hopefully
it might even
this...
be live if we can get together, but yeah, I'm not too far away.
Yeah, we're close. We can do
yeah,
it.
Definitely.
You know, just remember, you know, it's, you know, Urson was talking about like his schedule and when we need to do it and just, you know, from, you know, whatever, September, October until, we get into baseball seasons. Like my facility is essentially, occupied with hundreds of kids like for, 23 hours a day, so we can't teach any courses in the winter. So you'll notice that trend. We'll probably do a seminar or two in the summer, and that's it. We can't do anything in the winter.
That's right. Summer's perfect for me anyway. I'm taking time off from traveling, for my hectic traveling schedule, which is only once a month. Twice a month would be nuts. That's like
it's terrible.
It's like always being the away team. There's no. Although I do usually have one home game in terms of like teaching locally in Buffalo, like once a year, and it's so nice.
Right. Oh my God, that's the best one, right? That's the ones we love.
Yeah, but I mean, more people know me in like in Boston and New York City. I mean, thanks to you, more people know me in Boston than in Buffalo. I feel like no one knows me in Buffalo.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's how it works. But yeah, Boston's beautiful.
That's how it works
summer.
For me, not for you. I'm pretty
he's that weird eclectic guy that everyone talks about. Yeah, that eclectic
Mike
guy.
Mike comes walking to my first course in Boston 3 years ago, and all people do is whisper.
I didn't pick up on that.
I picked up on that.
Well,
was
it nice things? Was
you
it
like,
nice things you're whispering?
Mike sneaks in back and acts like, you know, he's not really there. And because I'm up in front teaching, everyone's like, Mike Rhino.
I didn't even know you were teaching a course. I just was stumbling
oh,
around.
He was lost. Actually walking, like, oh shit, Urson's here. I gotta act like a.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was you taught a course in the hotel where I believe I got married there, right? Didn't I tell you
that? I think
you
told me that, yeah.
That was funny. I'm like, you're teaching a course where? I'm like, you're kidding me. I had my wedding reception there.
It's a nice hotel.
Yeah, well, it's all right. But it's in a good spot.
Yeah.
So, Mike, you mentioned your practice. Let's talk a little bit about your practice. Urson said you transitioned to cash based, and obviously you said you see athletes, baseball, I'm guessing. And when did that transition happen, and kind of how does your clinic run at this point?
Well, I mean, I've essentially been cash based since my baseball Red Sox days. I didn't really kind of go back to insurance, but I was kind of just dabbling, I guess, after the Red Sox were so time consuming and so burnt out. Or I should say I was so burnt out after that, you know, experience, which was, you know, unbelievable, obviously, but just so, you give 120%, you know, people don't realize that in baseball you work 14-hour days, 7 days a week with no days off, like, ever, you know, so it's, you know, people don't get that. So, you know, you're totally, totally burnt out. So I kind of like took like a sabbatical for about like a year or two.
How long did
afterwards.
You do that for?
I did it for 7 seasons.
Wow.
So yeah, it was good. It was good. And then, you know, I got it at the right time. You know, I was young and it was good. And, you know, we had one kid, you know, my wife and I, and, you know, it was all right. We'll get by when the kid's young and stuff. And then, you know, we were pretty close to, moving to Chicago. We were going to go, kind of join the Cubs and kind of do that thing. And then kind of found out we were going to have our second kid. And I don't know, it was just time to make a change, I guess, and just, you know, think more about your family and stuff, I guess. That was kind of what I was thinking at the time. So so I kind of took like a year or two, kind of like mild sabbatical. I probably saw clients cash based for like, I don't know, 10 hours a week or something like that, and just tried to like decompress a little bit. But, you know, I always wanted to build, you know, the clinic. So we started Champion. So Champion Physical Therapy and Performance in Boston here. And it's essentially a, you know, an integrated approach is kind of what we say to physical therapy and fitness and sports performance. So, you know, we have PT, we have, you know, sports stuff for the, you know, the kids and the athletes. And then we have like adult fitness and boot camps and stuff like that. Cause I think we can all agree that, you know, our manual therapy and stuff like that is great, But the key to really most people is getting them stronger and getting on a nice kind of like, you know, fitness strength program. So, you know, I just, for me, it's just easier to do that all in-house and just make it a nice collaborative integrated system. So, so that's kind of, it's kind of what we built. I partnered up with a longtime friend of mine, Lenny Macrina. Lenny and I kind of grew up together and worked down in Birmingham for a while. So I was kind of, you know, trying to get him back up here to Boston. You know, and it's been great. We were cash based and kind of a blend of fitness and PT, and I don't know, it's been fun.
What would you say some of your most, some of the biggest challenges have been getting something like that started up and maintaining it and growing it?
I think the biggest challenge with cash base, and I think it depends on your market a little bit, but for me, I'm in Boston. We are like the private practice capital of the world, maybe us in New York, I guess. Like there's just private practices like a dime a dozen everywhere. So that's a bit of a challenge. It's also a bit of an advantage because their quality of care maybe isn't what we deem awesome.
So, AKA their shitty clinics.
Are you saying it's easy to float to the top?
Yeah, it's well, the majority of our people have gone to therapy elsewhere, and they're just like, seriously, what the heck was that?
I think every good clinician hears that story. Yes. For sure.
Yes. Well, you know what it is? So I give everybody, and so for the people listening that live in Massachusetts, I'm sorry. it's not you. I don't think it's you. It's our system. New York's like that too. The insurance reimbursement rates in Massachusetts are very low. It's one of the lowest states in the country.
What do you get? What do you get?
Oh, I don't know. From the research I did when we looked at if we were going to do, you know, insurance or cash based, I think it's like $70 on average. But that includes.
Oh my gosh, we get like 45.
Oh, I would say that includes Medicare, though. You take Medicare out of that, and I think from the regular insurance carriers, you're definitely not getting that much. But even so, 45 in New York, which is terrible. New York's, I think, one of the worst. Yeah. Massachusetts is like top five, I think. It's terrible. In Birmingham and Alabama, we were making like well over $100 a visit. Like yeah. it was unbelievable down there. But so what I'm getting at though here is that you can't pay rent in Boston getting that low of insurance reimbursement. So your model kind of stinks, right? Like you sacrifice the quality of care because you kind of have to. So it's not like the people around here are bad or anything like that. I mean, I have a lot of good friends that have great practices and they do a great job, but the environment is challenging here. You know, and I think a lot of new grads are going to face that environment that, you know, it's not that people want to give bad care. It's just that you have to pay the rent, you know, so it's, you know, it's challenging. So I would say that was it. But then my other big thing with Boston, obviously, is we don't get a lot of referrals from doctors. And I think that's kind of like the number one source, I would say, probably PTs get is from doctors, right? But in our environment here, it's unbelievable. Like our hospital systems are huge, obviously, because it's downtown Boston, and they you know, they essentially pressure them to just send them in house to their system. So we don't get a lot from doctors. I mean, I have a lot of good doctor friends and to send me like their kind of like their problem people or whatever. But I would say that's our biggest challenge is we don't get the typical referral streams. So you have to like kind of create your own cash based referral streams.
And how have you done that?
I was just going to say that. I led you perfectly to the next question, right?
Well done. Thank you.
Well, I mean, once you get going, it's easy, right? You just provide elite level care. And we kind of consider ourselves like concierge level care. Like, you know, like I have people texting me at 10 o'clock at night with a stupid question. And, you know, we get back to them. That's because that's the model we did in sports medicine. And I actually see that as being a very effective model. So once you get rolling, if you provide elite level care and you really care about your people, it gets easy, right? It's a snowball effect. You know, but at the beginning, you gotta, you know, it's nice to have a niche. So we had a baseball niche, but it's about like collaborating with other like-minded people. So, you know, in my world, I collaborate with like a ton of, you know, awesome fitness people and strength coaches and, you know, nutritionists and chiropractors and stuff like that. And, you know, people that own like CrossFit boxes and stuff like just stuff like that. It's about kind of collaborating and saying like, hey, how can we kind of help each other? You know, and I think that's really what it is. Like, once you kind of get your niche and you get your passion, it's hard to be cash based and be generic, right? You can't be like the generic dude that does it all. You gotta have a niche. So obviously we have baseball.
You can't do cash based ultrasound. He's the ultrasound guy.
It doesn't click. So that's funny. Like I do ultrasound. And you know why I do ultrasounds?
How dare you?
Because I can.
How dare you?
I'm proud to say I do ultrasound. Do I do it all day? No. I mean, I might do
like this is the only quote that people are going to be talking about for this entire podcast.
Well, we can't air this episode now.
Well, you know why people stop doing ultrasound? You know the number one reason why?
Web PT is the ultimate EMR for physical therapy. You know that. One of the reasons is because they know ICD-10, and I don't. So I ask Heidi Janenga, COO of WebPT. Heidi, what the heck is ICD-10?
Well, ICD-10 is diagnosis codes on steroids. We're talking more than 68,000 codes. All HIPAA-covered entities must switch to ICD-10 on October 1st, 2015, or face claim denials. That's where WebPT can help. Our intuitive ICD-10 code selector is built right into our documentation platform, thus simplifying the patient diagnosis process. I encourage all of you to check it out. Visit webpt.com/podcast to request a free online demonstration.
It wasn't getting reimbursed.
It works the same way, whether it's on or off.
There are very good reasons of why I may use it at certain times.
Because the patient wants it.
It's not a big deal. It could be that they want it. It could be that I'm trying to, you know, do anything I can to neuromodulate some tone. I'm trying to get them to calm down. I'm trying to get them to feel a little bit better, a little nice warmth in there. I'm trying to get them to relax. I'm trying to get them to just lay on their stomach and chill out, right? It doesn't matter how we accomplish that, but we're just trying to get them to relax because I'm about to do something else. I don't know what I'm about to do, but I'm about to do something else, and that helps prep it for that.
Yeah, right? Well, part of your startup cost was an ultrasound machine. Mine is not.
but what I'm getting at, though, is that I use every now and then because I can, because I don't really care what an insurance company says, and I don't care. But not to get off topic or anything, but like, you know, getting back to what we're talking about, you got to have a niche. You got to have something. That's the important part. I don't want you guys crucifying me over a freaking ultrasound, which I know you guys want to.
No.
Let's tweet on an ultrasound.
The title of this podcast is Mike Reinhold uses ultrasound.
Yeah.
That's all it's going to be. It's going to be like this 2 minute diatribe.
I think I did one today. I did one today. Take that. What do you got to do with that?
Boom. Was it plugged in?
Oh, yeah, I jacked that baby up too, baby. Continuous. 2.0.
You know what I tell people?
No
about
lotion,
ultrasound?
Hardcore.
I was like, the good thing about ultrasound is that you can do it wrong. Like, the one thing about cold laser is it's so weak you can't even hurt someone with it.
Laser.
If you could act, you know, it has to do something because you can do it wrong. And I certainly remember back in modalities lab when my roommate actually skipped the lecture because I don't know, she was off with her boyfriend or something. So she missed the part where you had to keep it moving. So she's just practicing on me and kind of watching what everyone else is doing. And she stops moving. And I was like, oh no. So I start yelling because it hurts. So she takes it off, and then the instructor comes off, like, oh, you can't take it off. You're going to break the crystal. And, you know, so that's what I experienced, the wave reflection coming back and like building and combining, and then you feel like that deep burning. So that's why I say tell the difference between cold laser and ultrasound is you can do it wrong.
Well, so I don't think you're using the right laser if you don't think you can do it wrong.
Like a cold laser, the one that's like so weak it's essentially a flashlight, not like the Perry Nixon's class 4 laser that costs like $90,000.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's LED. I use a light cure laser. That's LITE.
Oh, you have the same one.
I literally with the light cure, we've like done experiments in visiting training rooms. Don't tell anyone I said this. I guess I shouldn't reveal this on a podcast then, but we've like legit just like held it on like a treatment table, like a training room table, and in like 10 seconds it's like smoking and there's like a cigarette hole burn like in the training table. Wow. Like, hell yeah, this thing works.
That's hilarious.
It's like in 10 seconds. It's amazing.
Or so. Wow. I've heard that's what happens.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, again, it's whatever. The point we're getting at is I've controlled my destiny.
The point we're getting at is coming to a YouTube channel near you. Mike Reinhold burns tables with laser.
No, here's what I'm doing. You know what? Screw you guys. I am. My next course is going to be on. My next course is going to be on modalities. I'm going to do introduction to modalities. It's going to be. The eclectic modality.com.
Yeah, the more I integrate, I mean, trust me, my concepts, other than integrating pain science, which is hard, all my assessments and treatments and everything is so much easier than it was, when I graduated from University of St. Augustine, and they had like a 17-step evaluation process and
Right.
like 500 manipulations for every one area. Yeah, I mean, I keep on reducing the amount that I do rather than increasing.
Right.
But when you have like modern concepts in, like you throw in like modulation of pain versus stretching fascia, people, it re immediately reduces your audience. If you literally came out with like Mike Reinhold's whatever introduction to modalities, that would be your most popular product ever.
Mike Reinhold, how to ultrasound like an effing rock star.
That's probably interesting. Yeah, you have to have like a cooler name, right? How to
Definitely.
freaking dominate ultrasound. Oh, I know. Five ways to freaking ultrasound
Oh,
someone.
yeah. And then
Like it.
you could have the blog post about the myths of ultrasound.
Hey, but you
That sounds
stole
like a
that, by the
myth.
way. You stole. I'm watching you.
Oh,
I picked up
yeah.
on
I
that.
listened to you.
I picked up on that.
Yeah, you're like, hey, one of my most popular. Anytime I write about a myth of something, my engagement goes up. I'm like, damn, I'm doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's the contrarian approach. I like it. So,
Yeah.
five myths about ultrasound. One, works. Two, suck it. I like
Best blog
that.
post ever.
Yeah, you can edit that out if you want.
Absolutely
Let's
not.
start with that. This is the only part of the podcast we're actually going to air.
Yeah, this is going to be it. Everything in the beginning is cut out.
You're too much.
But I think the point of all this, aside from making fun of ultrasound and modalities, is that it comes
Still
back.
wasn't making fun of.
It comes back to outcomes. It's that end of the
Right.
day, it's the person feeling better. And I think the one thing most of us and all of us should agree on, that actually the most science that we have is not in our profession. The most science that we have is in psychology. It's in the communication and stuff that most PTs never use, in understanding human nature and understanding how to communicate properly with people. And once you figure out that communication aspect and psychology of it, then I think PT becomes a lot more powerful. And I 100% agree with what you said, Mike, earlier on, that we're still figuring this stuff out, that we are not doing anything right. We're just doing the best we can at this point. And there's still a lot to figure out, and still a lot of cool stuff, I think, on the horizon for us.
Yeah, the phrase I always say, I see it a lot, but they go, I don't know when, 100 years, 1,000 years, but they're going to be laughing at us that we thought the Earth was round. It's just, that's how it is. I mean, definitively, the Earth was flat at one point in time, right? Like, that was well known, it's flat, sorry. And then it wasn't. So, I mean, everything we think today, we're gonna hack up, we're gonna regurgitate, we're gonna probably go backwards, then we're gonna go forwards again. You got to be open mind. And the negative of the internet and the negative of social media is that so many people use it as a platform to argue their point instead of listening to others and considering that maybe they have a good point and they should adapt theirs. But people are so defensive on their stance versus actually keeping an open mind. I don't know, it's disappointing, I guess.
It is. I
It
think
is.
that's
I block
definitely.
and ban those people.
I like it. I don't block anyone, Erwin. I think that's Erson. I think that's disrespectful. No, I know
Well,
who
they
you're
have to, you
talking
have to earn my block, you know?
about.
I don't just block you for any particular reason. There's just a certain way that certain people may word things, like, hey, where's the evidence on this, and this? Or the three pillars are ridiculous. And
Right.
it's often like some new grad who's just been groomed by certain forums to think a certain way. And I get it, but
Right,
like,
right.
I just think, oh yeah, so you say that experience doesn't count. And certainly there's tons of clinicians out there been practicing 10, 20, 30 years, and they never changed a thing. But so you're this enlightened noob who reads all the evidence that says experience doesn't matter for outcomes. But in 15 years, do you think you're not going to be any better? Or are you going to be like, wow, I wish I was 2 years out again?
Right,
No
right.
one, no, the only people who quote research that says experience doesn't matter are noobs. Like, I wouldn't quote that now. I mean, experience in the hands of someone who actually changes, it's one of the things that I ask I want anyone to repeatedly ask themselves is like, what have you changed? Like, what was the last paradigm shift you had, or what have you changed in the past couple of years? Because if you're still doing things exactly the same as you have like 3 or 4 years ago, you might be, you know, you might want to change things up a little bit.
Right. Like, well, and it goes back to what Gene said too. I think if you're the young clinician and you're acting that way, you're not connecting with your patients. There, like, you have no chance of connecting your patients acting like that. I hate to say it, you can't be a dork, right? It depends. I mean, in the outpatient or the sports medicine situation, I just don't think you can. And we see so many students that are trying to be like, you know, so like freaking scientific with everything and, you know, all these things. It's you can't act that way to the patient. It just, you have to connect with them. You have to, like, you have to have some emotion. You can't be the robotic scientist. Like, you have to connect. So as you get older, I think you just get better at connecting people. You get better at stories and, you know, like just being able to like relay your message a little bit better. And I think that's why the expert experienced clinicians do a better job, you know, getting their outcomes, is that they can connect to the person better. You know, the new grad, you know, can't. So the worst thing you can do is be a very opinionated new grad that, you know, defends their position. Like, look, you've only been practicing for a year. What the heck are you defending? There's nothing to defend. Like, just because somebody wrote this in a forum, you don't know. Experience it, and then you can make your own opinions. But don't defend your position. You've been a PT for 2 years. What the heck's wrong with you?
And on that note,
I think that noob.
The to play a little devil's advocate here. I strongly and fully think that DPT students, or at least new grads, I think their superpower is connecting with people. And I think we're on a spectrum in terms of when you come out of school, you want to do everything in your power to prove that you belong, that you can treat patients, that, you know, the question of, oh, how long have you been practicing? It's a painful question to be asked when you're new, because you don't know how to answer, because you feel like if you say, oh, I've been practicing for a month or 6 months or a year, that you lose credibility. And I think that's absolutely... human nature, it's correct, but in terms of practice, that's absolutely wrong. Because when you're new, you're so excited, you're so passionate, you're so emotional about clinical practice that's what you need to use. That's what you need to build, instead of focusing, like you said, Mike, on this is what the research shows. Just being a robotic type of spewer of information, and that's not education. That's not connection. That's just reciting. And I think if the new grads really, really focus on and build up the self-awareness that, yeah, it's okay that I'm just out, and people will get better. People don't care. They care about outcomes. The one or two people, you know, the 80-20 rule. Yeah, if 20% of people complain and don't like that, so what? Move on. You still have 80% right. of people that will gravitate towards that. They will build that authentic connection, and their outcomes will improve, and you'll become a much better clinician, that you don't have to prove your worth because you've practiced for 3 weeks or so. You know, if they can hone in on that and get comfortable with that, I think new grads, it'll be a whole new world.
Yeah, no, I agree. That makes perfect sense.
All right. So speaking of perfect sense, man, I just saw the Orioles traded for Mark Trumbo from the Mariners. So we started with a baseball pickup, and I think we're going to finish out with a baseball pickup.
Yeah, no, that's great. You guys, tough to be an Orioles fan, though. Sorry,
you know, I'm not an Orioles fan.
Things were going so well until the end, Mike. It was going so well.
It's just tough. Hey, that's one of the most beautiful ballparks in the country, though. So there you go. There's a positive. See, I'm like a Dale Carnegie kind of guy. I want to end on a good note here.
It is a beautiful ballpark.
Great sausages out there in the outfield. Fantastic. I highly recommend them.
Boog's Barbecue. I can't have that. Boog's Barbecue is delicious. I'll tell you a quick story about Camden Yards when a few years ago, because we missed the playoffs for like 15 straight years, in case you didn't know that.
Yeah, we're all well aware.
Thank you. Thank you. So that's the one that took a little bit of time to win a World Series. But when we got the playoffs back a couple years ago, it was the first game at Camden Yards was against the Yankees. And we went to that game, my wife and I, and there was a 2-hour rain delay before the game. And I don't remember if I told the story or not, but I'm going to say it again because I'm on a roll. It was, we got there and the stadium was packed. So the stadium holds about 45,000 people. And right across the street is Ravens Stadium, M&T Bank Stadium. And that holds like 80,000 people. And it's a beautiful stadium in itself. And it's crazy. And, you know, the Ravens are usually good, except for this year. But we get to Camden Yards and it starts pouring and nobody leaves. Everyone is just there under the bleachers, just having a good time. So 2 hours later, everyone sits down, and the announcer's like, "Okay, ESPN's coming on. Wave your towels." And before he can even finish saying that, everybody stands up and starts screaming. And for the first time in my life, I felt what energy feels like. Like when people say the energy here is crazy. For the first time ever, I've been to Ravens playoffs games, and it was cool. But 45,000 people, it felt like I was in a stadium filled with hundreds of thousands of people. Like my entire body was shaking. It was like being at a NASCAR race, except, you know, it wasn't hundreds of horsepower cars, it was people. And it was insane. It was an incredible experience.
Yeah, it's fun stuff, man. I agree.
Now we just need to get that into the physical therapy world.
Yeah, that's what champion's like every day.
Boom.
Awesome. Whoa, we got to get there. That's what I say. That's what my seminars are like.
That's what the ultrasound seminar is going to be like.
That's yeah.
Hell yeah.
How about we do live hands-on modalities seminar?
That'd be so unexpected.
Let's practice, and then when people do it for 5 minutes, they're like, no, that has to be 8 minutes or longer.
Definitely.
It has to
Clockwise as
be
well.
good times.
It's like the fashion world, you know. I feel like the 80s are coming back in terms of fashion, so it's gonna be like physical
Oh
therapy too.
yeah, what's old is new.
We should definitely get together and do a podcast again and actually try to help people instead of just fooling around like we've done in this hour. So
Totally. I mean,
you
like
guys are
that live thing you, Chris Johnson, and I did, and you were like eating pasta the whole time.
was hungry.
I know, I can tell.
Welcome to Therapy
That
Insiders podcast. I'm not sure what other
was
podcast you're thinking about doing serious stuff to help people, but not this one.
Totally agree.
But in somewhat seriousness, it was definitely a great convo, and we would very much love to have you back to talk about. I think there's so many other things. We can create a whole mini series, I think, with you coming back and talking about shoulders in specific. And we did mention some of your products, and I think it would be remiss if we didn't tell listeners where to go. So, Mike, if our listeners want to find out some more stuff about the shoulder, or where to find you online, or how to ultrasound the shit out of somebody's arm, where would they find that?
The first swear of the podcast. I was hoping it wasn't going to be me. I like it. I'm glad it was Eugene. That's
Oh
good.
no, actually I swore a while back. You missed it.
Yeah, I totally missed it. You're so innocent, Erson. I think that's
Yeah.
the No, I mean, I'm easy to find. I'm just, you know, my hub is just MikeReinold.com, just my name. And from there, you know, a bunch of, you know, products. I think, you know, the best place to start is, you know, just going through all my free resources on my blog, kind of like Erson said. You know, and then probably joining my inner circle for a little bit more in-depth stuff. That's kind of like my area where I interact a little bit more with my members and some specific questions they may have, and kind of a private forum. But then, like, we go into topics a little deeper with some private webinars and stuff. So it's you know, for me, to me, that is the best type of education we have right now in our profession is, you know, even stuff like this podcast. It's the short chunks of information provided online that I can consume when it's convenient for me. You know, that's the way to do it. So you know, so check out my inner circle, and then, you know, obviously I have a bunch of different specific products that are out there. So yeah, just, you know, just the main website.
All right, check Mike out and
rehabwebinars.com.
Yeah, I got a bunch that are out there. So we got, you know, rehabwebinars.com, which is totally a sneaky website, by the way. I don't think people realize how good that website is. Not to be, you know, I barely have provided any content on that, but that's a collaboration I've done with a lot of smart people. But essentially, that is something I've done with ASMI, the American Sports Medicine Institute. They have weekly sports medicine conferences It's like twice a week on Mondays and Fridays for their fellowship program. It's part of their sports medicine fellowship. And essentially over the last like 5 years or so, we've put the content from those presentations onto rehabwebinars.com. So it's like a very comprehensive sports medicine type website with like well over 100 webinars on there. It's a sneaky website, but I think, you know, once you find it, you realize, wow, there's a lot of good stuff on here, like pretty much covering an entire, you know, sports medicine fellowship education process.
I'm intrigued just to find out what a sneaky website is. So that's just that gets me curious to check it out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I guess it's, I guess what I mean by that is,
Don't ruin it, Mike. Don't ruin it.
We got to advertise. We don't advertise. It's not an advertise thing. It's like, hey, it's just, you know, here's the education we're providing. If you want our education, here it is. Like, we're trying to not be creepy about like the advertisements of it. So, you know, it's just, you know, here's what we're doing on this website. And I think when you discover it, you're like, dang, there's a lot of stuff on this website. I had no idea it was there.
Awesome. Well, check out rehabwebinars.com and let us know if it's sneaky or not. our hashtag Project PT this week is let Mike know what he should ultrasound, and he'll make a YouTube video for you guys to show you, or if
five ways to ultrasound.
Yeah, top five body parts Mike should ultrasound on himself. So
I like hashtag number Project two, PT. Suck it. That was the best.
How about I do a live video demonstration of the entire process of the ultrasound?
Nice. Like, Plug in optional.
I'll zoom in on like my hand so you can see my circular motion, and then
try. I want to be there for that. I'd like to film that.
He puts the lotion on.
This is the one. This is the one semester that we do not have a PT student, so you may actually see me doing it. So
that's what you use your students for.
That's exactly right. It's called a lunch break for us. We have to. that's the negative cash base too. There's really no lunch break
from Mike. Students learn so much from Mike.
Yeah,
got to pay their dues. PT students.
That's right. That is right. Hey, my PT students have a blast. We play wiffle ball every day. We've introduced them to spike ball, which we've installed in our batting cages. So if you're familiar with that beach game, spike ball, we play that, like, you know, try to play it once a week or so. So it's a pretty good clinical rotation. Plus, like, I work like 20 hours a week. So they have a lot of downtime.
That's pretty good. That's good stuff. Sign me up, man. I'm down.
it's a good rotation.
Forget this media company stuff first and sign me up for that.
I'm just going to go be a student.
Seriously, I'm going back to school.
I can wear ultrasound.
Oh, good times. Good times.
But hey, just remember, there's a right way and a wrong way to ultrasound, and you're going to learn it.
Counterclockwise or clockwise? Is that what you mean?
All right. I'm going to bed, guys.
Okay. All right, Mike. Thanks so much for joining us. So check out Mike, MikeReinold.com. And if you have any questions for Mike, you can find him on Twitter, his website. Let us know as well. And as always, keep the reviews coming on iTunes. Check us out at Therapy Insiders. Just plug that in. We've been kind of perennially now, and week after week, in the hovering in the top 20 of iTunes medical podcasts. And that's because of the listens and the reviews. So thank you so much, listeners. And definitely check out updocmedia.com. We got a lot of cool stuff going on. We think it's cool, and we hope you do as well with our blogs, the podcast, and recently launched business consulting for our private practice listeners, you know, helping you out with social media marketing, business plans, all that set up to the new world, kind of we talked about the right way of doing it. So if you're interested, check us out, updocmedia.com. And Mike, Inner Circle, is that like the meet the fuckers of, what's that, Circle of Trust?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing it for a while. I think Inner Circle was a cooler phrase back when I started it. I don't know what I'd call it now if I started over, but absolutely. Come join me. You can enter my Inner Circle.
Join Inner Circle.
When you rebranded it, when you started, I was like, damn, that's a good name.
That's funny. So I don't know, I think it's getting old, but whatever.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and, And the entry, unless unlike other frats and stuff where you had paddled, the entry is just ultrasound. You just get ultrasounded and you're good to go. So you have to
submit a YouTube link of yourself doing ultrasound on a specific body part.
There you go. So get some ultrasound, get it dusted out of the closet, and get it on, and you got yourself an entry to the Inner Circle. So check it out. Check out Mike. And we're definitely looking forward to the 2016 course with Mike and Urson. So we'll keep you posted on that once something develops. So Mike, it was a lot of fun, man. We definitely love to have you back and talk some more clinical stuff. I know Urson has been dying for more clinical talk. So when you get some time, let's have you back on here.
Yeah, sounds good.
Do three more business podcasts.
Well, thanks guys for having me. Thanks for doing this. This is, this sort of stuff's needed in our profession. So thanks for being leaders in this sort of stuff, guys. We appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. And so everyone have a good night. Check us out, and we'll be back next week.